This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. With us is our nutritionist and resident, Layla Mudin, who is an RDN, registered dietitian, nutritionist. We clarified that in part one. You gained an initial since our last broadcast, so congratulations.
Yes.
So now you have five initials instead of four.
Five initials.
I have five, too. I'm an MD CNS, certified nutrition specialist. So we're, now we're equal.
Yeah. Except I'm not an MD.
Okay. No, but in terms of numbers of initials, we're on a par.
Right.
So in part, by the way, a reminder that you can send questions to radioprogram@aol.com, and we will endeavor to answer them as we're in the process of doing today. So the question, could you repeat the question, please, that we are in the midst of answering?
From Martin. My lab report, my creatinine level was 1.52. Are there any vitamins you could recommend to lower it?
Okay. So, by the way, just first thing I would do is, so this is for my patient, I'd say, okay, make sure you're well hydrated, and we'll repeat the test.
Yes.
Because one test that's a little borderline does not necessarily mean that there's a serious problem. It's a little high.
Right.
But it could be that he was a little dehydrated, or it could be a glitch in the lab machinery. And so I don't hang my hat on one test. And, then it comes back 1.35 and we're okay. And then I say, we'll come back in 3 months and let's just make sure that it's not going up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we talked a little bit about the causes of kidney compromise, because this is not kidney failure. This is kidney compromise. It's a little reduced,
right,
what's called GFR, which is glomerular flow rate. In other words, the kidneys are not filtering with full efficiency at this point. They may be, when it's 1.5, they may be filtering, at about 30 or 40% efficiency. And that's okay, because you can hang out there for a while. Many older individuals, are fine with just 30% of their full young adult capacity. But, you get down, 10, 20%, then you got problems. You can't filter out toxins, and that's no good. Okay, so now let's talk about diet, and that's in your realm, because when I see a patient who's got renal compromise, they've got a creatinine of 1.8 or 2.1, and we've had many patients like this. We had a couple of patients who have one kidney, and they have had, and they've come back from high creatinines. Creatinine's in the twos, and now they're back in the ones. So what do you do with them?
Well, we have to put them on what's called a renal diet, a kidney diet. We have to moderate the amount of protein that they take in. It's not a low protein diet. That at this point is old science. We do need some protein, not as high as anybody else.
Can you speak to the controversy on that? Because it used to be that patients were put on ultra low protein diets.
Yes.
That was the teaching, and maybe it was the teaching when you went to school. And what's the problem with that? I mean, why should that be?
The problem with that is that's going to compromise renal status even further. We do need some protein for life. So no longer do we recommend as low as 40 grams of protein a day. It might be closer to 60 to 80, just so the rest of the body can function as well. And
also,
it is
also
not
protein really helps with satiety. So people tend to, and many of the people who have renal problems have blood sugar issues. And so they go back to a very low protein diet, and they seek out lots and lots of carbs. And that, causes their blood sugar to go up, insulin resistance, and that damages the kidneys further. So,
Right. So exactly. And it is still, this one myth won't die, Dr. Hoffman, that high protein diets cause kidney disease. That is completely untrue. In an already compromised renal status, if you are have kidney disease. We simply have to moderate the amount of protein you take it. In no way, shape, or form do we put you on a high protein diet in this regard.
Right.
So basically, the amount of protein needs to be monitored. We may have to monitor the amount of potassium and phosphorus as well in the diet if phosphorus levels begin to go up.
Where do they come from dietarily? Where could you go wrong with too much?
Dietarily, phosphorus?
Yeah.
Yeah, phosphorus can come from nuts, from legumes, dairy sources.
But not
primarily.
From meat? Not from meat?
Not from meat, no, not much.
Really?
Not as much.
But certainly soda. Certainly soda is awful.
Oh,
cola beverages are awful from the standpoint of phosphorus, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And never would I recommend anyone drink soda. So that's already eliminated as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But the actual whole foods that may be problematic for somebody with a higher phosphorus.
And where could you go wrong with too much potassium? Because I thought potassium is generally good. But here in this case, the kidneys can't filter it. So where could you go wrong?
Exactly. So you want to monitor the amount of bananas you're eating or potatoes or avocados you're having.
Juicing.
There's certain higher potassium. You don't want to do all that juicing.
Right.
We have to be careful the amount of, you know, I often give a list of low potassium foods to my renal patients.
Could they have problems with oxalates too?
Yeah.
You know, like
in green
leafy vegetables? Is that possible?
That is a possibility, and we would even actually monitor the amount of any vitamin C that they take because it may actually kind of move them into some oxalate formation. But the oxalate has so much more to do with the microbiome, and I just find all that
the
intestines. So, an oxalate primarily with formation of kidney stones, which is different from kidney disease. You can have kidney stones and not have any kidney disease.
Right.
It could be that you don't have enough of the beneficial bacteria to transform that oxalate or to break down that oxalate in the gut, number one. You're not getting enough citrate in the form of either citric acid like lemon water or magnesium citrate or even a calcium citrate. I've seen many doctors prescribe for those who are prone to kidney stones.
This is around kidney
take
stones.
Some citrate.
So,
and that's about kidney stones, yeah.
Okay, so that what about fat? Because we talked about carbohydrates and protein.
Yeah, fats are fine.
So there's fats really are neutral vis-a-vis the kidney.
Exactly. They're neutral. Now, with regard to supplements, we would be careful or not recommend taking additional fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A or vitamin E, vitamin K, or even D. But there are certain other supplements that could be very helpful. I know Dr. Hoffman
I kind of disagree on the D because many patients with kidney disease they need more D, and
they need more D.
Yeah, it's not going to cause problems in the kidneys.
Right, so, because they lose the ability to make the D.
Conventional nephrologists often prescribe a prescription form of D called 125 vitamin D or Rocaltrol because there's a step on making preformed D into metabolizable D. That's I think it's the 25 hydroxylation step that occurs in the kidney, and so you actually need that type of vitamin D to get your vitamin D stores.
Right, not the regular vitamin D.
Right.
Okay.
So that's okay.
So other supplements that are helpful, and I know this is one you clued me in on, Dr. Hoffman, is N-acetylcysteine.
Okay.
May help protect the kidney.
Okay.
As well from any, you know, damage from medication or anything, not just the liver, but also the kidney. Other helpful vitamins, CoQ10.
Yep. Because many of those patients have real energy depletion, too. So they could use the CoQ10. They feel better with that.
Right. Alpha-lipoic acid is very, very beneficial antioxidant.
Okay.
As well. Resveratrol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, resveratrol, not just for anti-aging, but helpful for kidneys. And P5P, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, helps to fight the AGEs, you know, the advanced glycation end products that also harm the kidneys. So fighting off the AGEs with some P5P, as well as lowering your intake of those AGEs, which come mostly from baked carbohydrate foods, your breads, your pretzels, your pastry, all of that kind of thing. Much less so.
Did we say fish oil?
Yeah. Fish oil is another good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fish oil is another good one.
I think there's also some evidence that there's a type of vitamin B1 called benfotiamine that may be protective to the kidneys as well.
Benfotiamine is also very good for peripheral neuropathies
right.
in diabetics. So B1 is very helpful.
As I'm sitting here, a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled clinical trial on benfotiamine treatment in patients with diabetic nephropathy, which is kidney disease. And what they found was it protects against kidney damage. Let me just see the results of this. Conclusions. So, yeah, they said that high-dose benfotiamine treatment for 12 weeks. Oh, it did not improve the status in this study. Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. I mean,
still very good for peripheral neuropathies. Yeah. Still very good for that and for any diabetic complications.
But then there's another study.
With regard to nerve damage.
Look, I got to say, this may be frustrating to people, but it seems to protect against kidney damage in patients who are already on dialysis. So I don't know. But they're already on dialysis. But, you know.
Right.
I guess it's one of those things that some studies say. And here's here's one. Vitamin B1 could reverse proteinuria, in other words, leakage of protein from the kidneys. So it's one of those things that kind of, some studies say yay and some studies say nay. It has been shown to have beneficial effects in patients with end-stage renal disease. Okay, so a definite maybe for benfotiamine.
Right.
It's kind of the way it is with research. Sometimes research is like, you know, even on drugs, it's like, this drug, you know, one study says this drug works great, another study says it doesn't. So that's not a disqualifier.
No, not at all. So, Martin, you could see if you're listening to this podcast, you need a consult. You need to investigate why your creatinine went up.
Yeah.
Another rare, maybe, instance, Dr. Hoffman, of why kidneys can get damaged, it could be foodborne illness. It could be
E. coli infections cause kidney failure. You know, salmonella infections can cause kidney failure. You know, there's any number of things. I mean, we had a patient who had an autoimmune disease who had kidney failure. It was a case of, I guess, scleroderma.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we have to monitor his protein intake, and we've thoroughly gone over the diet and so forth. And watching potassium and phosphorus, and we're monitoring him closely.
Yeah, and he's just sort of hanging in there on the cusp. He seems to be not worsening, but we'd like to see see some improvement.
Yeah. So, Martin, thank you for your very, very good question, and we hope these answers will help you out.
Okay. Next question, please.
Next question we have from Pat. Dr. Hoffman, I've been listening to you on Saturdays and receive your newsletter for over a year now. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I'm 65 and retired and loving it last December. And I was started on blood pressure pills, Losartan and HCTZ and Bisoprolol.
Okay. So there's a three medications.
Three medications for blood pressure that were started actually last December, so 10 months ago. In the last 6 months, I've noticed hair loss, a great deal of hair loss. Any connection with the meds I'm taking? Any suggestions on vitamins I could take? I started taking biotin 1,000 micrograms a day. Now, this is from Pat. Dr. Hoffman, I don't know if Pat is male or female, if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Well, but a lot of hair loss.
So, I mean, it's possible, although these are not highly common side effects of those medications. But on the one hand, you know, HCTZ, your hydrochlorothiazide, is a diuretic, and you can deplete minerals, which may have an impact on hair. And, you know, there's stuff happens when you take meds. I mean, I think virtually half the medications out there, you know, if you scroll down and look at the dozens and scores of side effects that they can cause, probably low on the list, but, you know, reported occasionally, less than 1% of the time, would be hair loss. So I'm looking up Losartan hair loss right now.
Yeah. I wonder if Pat, when he or she was found to have high blood pressure and given these medications, if Pat was advised to embark on a weight loss plan and maybe Pat lost weight too quickly, that can cause hair loss.
Right. And I'm looking at this thing called drugs.com, which BP meds don't cause hair loss. And research indicates that beta blockers, which she's on, and ACE inhibitors, which she's on, can cause hair loss. So,
interesting.
You know,
a great deal of hair loss. Yeah.
But then this person says they were given something called an ARB, which is a different type of medication, and she complains of hair loss. Now, I have to say that occasionally we'll see somebody who says, hey, you know, I turned 65, I went on high blood pressure medications, and now my hair's fallen out. Correlation isn't necessarily causation, because it's not
That's
uncommon
right.
to see, you know, I mean, you know, ever since Trump got elected, I've seen a lot of hair fall out. You know, it's like, well, is it causation or correlation? Unless you're pulling your hair out, you know, it's like, you have to see if indeed it's the medication. But, okay, so let's talk about things that may help. You mentioned biotin, I think.
Biotin, yeah.
Silica.
Well, Pat is taking biotin, about 1,000 micrograms a day. I would suggest that Pat take more. However, again, what you just said, Dr. Hoffman, that correlation is not causation, I wonder if at the same time Pat has anemia, if Pat has high cortisol levels, if Pat at the very least has a very low ferritin or has undergone some recent stress, even though they're recently retired and loving it, so I imagine stress is not part of the equation. But there are other things here to investigate about that hair loss.
You know, when you look to hair loss, often the hair loss occurs, it's a lagging indicator of something that happened 6 months or a year ago. So, you know, people may say, you know, I don't get it. I finished my chemo 6 months ago. And now my hair's falling out. It should be growing back. It's like, no, because the chemo damaged the roots. And, you know, it's a little bit like those fires out in California. There's still some trees standing, but they're damaged and they're undermined and they will be falling down in subsequent months.
Interesting. Okay. So, Pat, you know, besides, another supplement I think would be helpful, Keratin Booster.
Yeah.
Which actually has some biotin in it as well, so that could be helpful, but
there's Keratin Booster for men and for women, and I think it's available on our FullScript account where we now refer patients. It's a comprehensive store where you can look under categories and, for example, immunity or hair, hair, skin, and nails, and you can look at the products that are available.
Crash dieting and rapid weight loss are a primary reason for hair loss.
Oh, yeah.
I find. What's happening? I lost some weight. I lost 20 pounds in 6 weeks, and now my hair is shedding. Well, that was kind of fast. So, yeah, that could be that. Okay. Or, again, anemia, but okay. Pat, we wish you luck. You should get a workup. See what else may be going on.
Yep.
All right.
So we have time for another question, so let's see if we can put that in the hopper.
Okay, let's see. We've got an email from Tom. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I've listened to your shows for over 20 years. Extremely appreciate the excellence and the effort that is obvious in every show and podcast. I can't take any credit for that. I'm only doing this for a couple of years now, Dr. Hoffman. So for 20 years, they've been listening to you. Tom has been listening to you.
You know, you can take a lion's share of the credit, because you know, you really contribute a lot to these, and you have your own podcast, and you know, people you know what, and this really upsets me, is I'll post my own solo podcast and I'll get a couple hundred people. Sometimes I'll post yours, and I know you're not on Facebook, you don't even care, and it'd be like thousands of people.
Oh my.
Because you have a knack for picking some of the topics that are like really, you know, clickbait, and people gravitate to them.
Oh, good. Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So Tom has a dilemma. Besides not having health insurance and waiting to go on Medicare in 16 months, he has both ankylosing spondylitis and Lyme disease.
Oh, boy. That's what a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to see his conventional physician because he would refuse immunosuppressive therapy like methotrexate or biologics like Enbrel or Humira.
So let me explain the bind here.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you know, the treatment for ankylosing spondylitis is to suppress your immune system with drugs that are now used for rheumatoid arthritis. But when you suppress your immune system and you have an infection, the infection can go wild and you can have just a devastating case of Lyme disease. So, that's trouble.
Yeah. Wow. So Tom is in quite a pickle here.
And he wants
And he wants to know what to do. He's taking high dose fish oil. Yeah. He's taking Boswellia, Mareva, resveratrol, but he started taking. Oh, he failed to obtain relief from unrelenting back pain until starting cat's claw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a patient.
It's still
a
challenge to know what to take. Yeah.
So this is a patient that we're not going to be able to prescribe a
consult.
I will say this. My experience with ankylosing spondylitis is it's absolutely imperative to get off any kind of wheat product, first of all.
Yes.
Secondly, if you could go on a paleo diet where you're eliminating grain altogether, that would be good.
Mm-hmm. All the better. Yep.
And dairy and some of the modern foods. And, a lot of anti-inflammatory stuff. And, you need appropriate treatment for the Lyme disease from a Lyme specialist who can administer the proper antibiotics, because they do make a difference. But ultimately, sometimes you're not sure whether the organisms are still alive, the spirochetes, and whether you're suffering from the aftermath of Lyme disease or whether you have active Lyme disease. And that's really the art of treating Lyme disease. And then we come back to, doing repair with all these natural anti-inflammatories that you need anyway for ankylosing spondylitis. Ankylosing spondylitis is a disease that's triggered by a microbiome. It's actually been known to be triggered by a certain bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract called Klebsiella in people who have a certain HLA subtype, which is HLA B27. In fact, that blood test for HLA B27 clinches the diagnosis for ankylosing spondylitis. So the microbiome is very important. In this disease, we want to optimize the microbiome, and that via diet, via supplements, via herbs, via probiotics, of course, that would be the approach.
Tom, wow.
That's a sketch. It's sort of like
before
every great artist creates a wonderful masterpiece, that's a canvas that's 8 feet by 6 feet. They do like little sketches. So that's a little sketch of what we might, of the masterpiece that would be trying to keep these dueling conditions under control.
Yeah. Wow. Tom, we wish you all the best of luck.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Dr. Hoffman, would you treat the Lyme first?
I think you'd have to give precedence to treating the Lyme.
And
then come back to treat the residual inflammatory problems.
Okay. All right, Tom. Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing us.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today's edition of our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we've got a couple questions left over for next time. We invite you to send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll answer them as expeditiously as possible in a future edition of Q&A with Layla. Check out FullScript for some of the supplements that we mentioned. You can access FullScript through our website at drhoffman.com. Just click on the store. It'll take you to FullScript. And there, once you've registered, you can browse the entire product selection there and look at some of my recommendations for various conditions. Thank you, Layla, for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. 1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.